Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Whistle for a cab, it's time for Must Have Seen TV, the podcast dedicated to the sitcoms of the 20th century. From I Love Lucy, the news radio, I'm your TV guy, Brett White. I'm also a reporter-producer for Decider.com, and this week I am joined by UCB personality, comedian, writer, performer, etc., etc., John Brashad.
Hello, Hi, thank you.
Yeah, welcome to the world of my podcast.
I'm so glad. I gotta
take a look inside.
I was curious what was going to be your opening thing. Whistle for a cab. I should have guessed.
Yeah, it was a lot of thinking. yeah, because with that theme song, there are so many things you can pull from.
It's truly amazing. I did a refresher course on Wikipedia on my way
here. Bring that info.
And I saw that in syndication, some channels cut the opening credits. That's insane to me.
That should be against the law.
I can't.
That should be punishable by some way.
If you see that Fresh Prince is coming up and you're flipping the channels, coming up in 5 minutes, and the opening credits doesn't play, do you watch the episode? No, I would say no.
I think you spend the entire episode being like, "That was a long cold open. That cold open had commercial breaks. What is this?" Yeah, this week on the show we are traveling to November 9th, 1992. Passenger 57 ruled the box office. End of the Road by Boys to Men topped the charts. And NBC aired the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode, A Night at the Opera. John, you must have seen A Night at the Opera before.
I had never seen that episode before. And if I had, I did not recall it.
I don't remember all of it, but the Will's remixed commercial for Uncle Phil, I 100% remember
all of that. I was so disappointed by that.
No, you wanted more.
The cold open. It's such a great setup. We launched in. Uncle Phil is saying, what is it saying? Oh, Will, I can't believe you changed my campaign commercial.
Yeah.
And then Will's saying, well, I made some more change as well. And we're setting it up for like 2 whole minutes. I made some other changes.
I'm
ready. I'm ready for this commercial. And he remixes 2 lines and splices in 2 home video.
But the one with the mouth and then him eating pizza was
that was fun.
Great.
I just wanted more.
Did you grow up watching Fresh Prince? Was it in rotation?
So what year was this again?
This was 1992. This was November 9th, 1992.
And this is season three.
Three.
So I was pretty young. I watched it more in syndication. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I had ever seen it. When I saw it as that show that the movie star was on.
Oh, right.
I don't think I ever was...
So you didn't see his rise.
I never saw it as the show that rapper is doing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm pretty sure this was... Because this was an NBC sitcom that was not part of the must-see TV, like, brand.
Yeah, you could watch this later.
Yeah, because this was a Monday night NBC show. It aired on Monday nights.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it was my sister liked it, and so I would watch it. I watched it every now and then when it was on. I think it was usually paired with Blossom.
Yes.
So it was like Fresh Prince and Blossom were the Monday night shows. But I didn't really... I wasn't a religious viewer. I started watching it a lot, I think, in its last season. So season 5. But I definitely was aware of Will Smith and, like, loved Will Smith, because I remember when Independence Day came out, it was like, you know, we were watching a movie star being born. I remember, like, rooting for Will Smith to do well when that movie came out.
I saw that in the theaters, and that was at 95?
96. 96, because Men in Black was 97.
So I would, to fully date myself, I would have been 9 when Independence Day came out. I saw in the theaters... And I was very excited. I was very excited to see a PG-13 movie.
Uh-huh.
And I had heard, because I was already getting into movies, and I had heard the pre-release buzz about how good, just like references in, you know, my driving to summer camp, hearing the entertainment news on 97.5 WPST.
Yeah.
And New Jersey's great top 45 station of the time. And they were talking about how good Will Smith was and how he was going to be huge. And that was the movie to see, and I saw it, and it was just like that kind of thing. I think at that age, you're very much like, the world is like, this guy's great. Yeah. And so I was, and let's be honest, he was great.
Yeah. God.
Even Welcome to Earth is, I mean, he punches that alien.
Even just like him walking through the desert, dragging in a parachute, like yelling, I should be at a barbecue. Like it's...
Well, he gets just the introduction to that movie where he is, all the other characters figure it out way before him because he's still in LA and he's asleep. I think they cut to him like not waking up in the first 20 minutes. Right. Like he's so great in that movie. And then I kind of have like being in summer camp and having friends be like, oh, he's on a TV show too. You can watch him always. All the
time. Yeah. And especially because I think Fresh Prince hit syndication like quick.
Yeah.
So I think as soon as it ended, because it only was on for 5 years, I think it had 140 something episodes. So it hit syndication, like as soon as it was off NBC, like it was on and then running, like TBS morning, afternoon. Now it airs on a number of channels, like still, and still gets like millions of viewers. I actually at work, I just did a piece because I'm very... My job is all about shows that stream and like writing about that. And so there have been a bunch of big like land grab moves where like Hulu has gotten all the TGIF shows and they made a big deal with Fox. And then Amazon just grabbed all of these early 90s sitcoms like Grace Under Fire, Roseanne, Sybil, Third Rock from the Sun. And so I was like, well, what is left? And so I did like this exhaustive hours and hours of research on Google Trends, figuring out like what are the most popular sitcoms that are not streaming anywhere. Fresh Prince came in third behind Big Bang Theory and 2.5 Men are 1 and 2, and then Fresh Prince is number 3.
So the two big currently running, well, two and a half men
sitcoms,
is done.
Yeah.
Chuck Lorre shows are not streaming anywhere?
Yeah, you cannot stream Big Bang or 2.5 Men anywhere.
What?
And they are still so popular online. But the fact that Fresh Prince comes in at number 3 of like all the sitcoms
surprised.
That aren't like people, and obviously deservedly so, people just like love this show. It was such, like, a fun show to watch as a kid when it was on, too. Because it's just so energetic and fun.
It's a classic premise.
I mean,
a fish-out-of-water premise. And then, I mean, he really is remarkable in the show. He is so charismatic. But then the supporting cast is wonderful.
I know. Let's dive right into it, because I got so much to say about all of these beautiful, beautiful people. This week on Must Have Seen TV, we're talking about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air episode, A Night at the Opera. It is the 9th episode of season 3. It was written by Leslie Ray and David Steven Simon, and directed by Shelley Jensen. Here's how iTunes describes the episode. When the Banks family members appear as guests on the Oprah Winfrey Show, a television talk show.
Oh, good.
As if
good
we
to
don't
know.
Know.
Good
their,
to know.
Their personal bickering causes an uproar in the studio. John, is that accurate?
That is so accurate. I would say that's the only thing that happens at this show, because there is barely a story.
Yeah, that's, this is not a plot dense. Last week we did a Night Court episode, and there was a bit of plot in that. We couldn't really just scoot through it. But 2 weeks ago we did a Monsters episode that was just Herman plays baseball. And that's all that was. Whereas, like, yeah, this, as you said, starts off with we find out that Phil is running to be a Superior Court judge, and so he has an ad that Will, who, let's unpack this. How old is Will?
Okay, so
this is what we were trying to figure out.
I could not figure out, because I'm sitting there, and so when I would have watched this show in syndication in the 90s, Will was just older.
Yeah.
You know, it's that vague when you're a kid.
I'm a kid, he's older.
He's a teenager.
Like, DJ is always older than me on Full House.
But now I'm watching it, and I am like, hold up, how old is he?
Yeah.
And I'm also like, how old is Hillary?
Yeah.
Because I guess she is out of school.
I guess, because in an episode earlier this year was her getting a job at a TV station, and I think that's where she meets this Trevor
guy. Is he an anchor?
Yes, I do.
I loved, you were asking me to look for some favorite characters, loved Trevor. And I also loved that they did not say that he is a TV anchor in this episode, but he signs off his phone calls like a TV anchor, and I was like, 100% yes.
Yeah. Also, is Trevor the one that dies in a skydiving accident?
Oh my god, does that happen?
That's a plot I remember. She gets engaged, and then, I'm pretty sure it's Trevor, they're watching him skydive, and he splats on the ground.
What?
Yeah, I'm
pretty sure. That's like a Seinfeld plot twist.
I'm pretty sure that's what happens to Trevor.
They malfunction licking envelopes to Trevor?
I think so.
To Hillary's fiance?
I think he did that before it happened to Susan.
Oh my god.
I'm pretty sure. I could be wildly off base, but I definitely do remember that and her not being that phased by
it. I'm going to hope that that's true.
I'm
going to hope that Seinfeld's edgiest plot twist was actually stolen from Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Years earlier. In a much more gruesome way, too.
Truly!
But yeah, so like, Will, they are still in the prep school, because He's wearing the jacket inside out, which I remember is a plot point from an earlier episode, where he first enrolls in the school that Carlton goes to, and he starts wearing his jacket inside out, and then everyone else does too, and then Carlton's like, no!
He looked great. Yeah. That jacket is awesome. I really was like, before I came here, I was at seeing a movie in Williamsburg, and it filled with people dressed very cool, and I was just like, that look, he could walk down the street in Brooklyn right now.
Oh, this entire show, honestly, is just like, leap out of the TV and just walk anywhere.
I guess we are very fully in, I guess it's been going for a couple years now, but fully 90s nostalgia fashion.
Yeah, everyone looks like, girls are just dressing like Courtney Love meets Sabrina the Teenage Witch all over the place, and it's interesting. The opening is that the remixed commercial.
Hi, I'm Philip Banks, and I'm running for Superior Court judge.
Which is fine. There's some stuff that I liked in there. I liked Uncle Phil's performance. I liked what's his name?
James Avery?
James Avery. I want to say Avery
The
Brooks.
Late, great James Avery.
Wait, no, he's still... Wait, did he die recently?
Am I crazy?
I don't think...
Am I confusing him with Reginald Val Johnson?
No, I think they're both still alive.
Because I think everyone was showing the clip, the famous clip with why doesn't he love me, and talking about how warm a character Uncle Phil was.
Let me just look up Reginald. Come on. Reginald Val Johnson is still alive.
Thank God.
He's only 65.
Thank God. I'm very glad.
Wow. And then James Avery?
I think he's dead.
James Avery may refer to actor. Oh, yeah, he is. Oh, he did die.
When did he pass?
2013.
Yeah. I remember everyone.
For some reason, I thought he was still. Oh well, no, I'm even sadder.
Yeah, I know, because
he's so good.
He really is. Yeah,
that is the thing about. I mean, we can talk about this. Like, I think that this show would still work without Will Smith.
Oh yeah, well,
that is the sign of this being a truly great show. Is that the way they the way they crafted it, because you hear like, hey, this guy's a rapper that kids like, let's give him a sitcom. That sounds like a horrible idea. Like, that's not going to fly.
No.
The only way it would fly is if you surrounded him with equally awesome characters and performers.
Well, Uncle Phil's great. And then Carlton and Hillary are wonderful characters. They're very much upper class, the Bundy siblings.
Yeah.
Ditzy and nerd,
yeah.
Although, you know, a difference, but they're very much like in those archetypes. But I was watching, because I was really thinking like how well all the family fit in. What is Tatiana Ali? What is her character?
Ashley.
What is Ashley's game? Just the young one?
Sweet and impressionable, I think.
She looks up to Phil, to Will.
To Will, yeah.
Okay. That
so
makes
they have
sense.
Kind of like an Uncle Jesse Michelle relationship, maybe at times.
She might be in a weird age where in this episode the show doesn't fully know what to do with her.
Because I think because I mean that is kind of the problem of like the youngest kid.
Yeah.
Because like you're Because, like, in some cases, you're waiting to see, like, how good of an actor are they going to be in 5 years? Like, what are they going to do? Because I think, like, the youngest kids are always the most ill-defined. Like, DJ on Roseanne, Mark on Home Improvement. They're like, well, that's why they made him a goth, like, in season 7, is because, well, like, who is he?
But then I'm trying to think of, like, some other... Dewey. How about Dewey and Malcolm in the Middle? What did he become? Wasn't he...
He was always just... A weird.
Weird.
He was just weird. That's the thing, is like, they either make them super cool or super weird, because, like...
I think if you give them a very clear archetype at the beginning, yeah, as a child, and not just the child, you have a much easier time doing it.
I will say, like, I think that Phil, Carlton, and Hillary, the three of them, and those performances are all so good. And honestly, like... Almost as iconic as Will, because it speaks really well to Fresh Prince that when you think Fresh Prince, you equally think Carlton, Hillary, Uncle Phil, and Will.
They give a Carlton dance break in there. They make a point to get it in there.
No reason. It's just he hears the Oprah Winfrey theme and just goes to town. So after the cold open, where the cold open ends with one of those great. Phil gets really mad, cut away to, like, the outside door, and then Will getting thrown.
Yes. Thrown, stuffed animal Will Smith gets thrown.
Thrown out.
It wasn't a terrible dummy, I will say. I've seen much worse dummies getting thrown out windows in sitcoms.
It was such a good, and that happens a lot, too.
Yes.
That definitely happens a lot. That's a really funny gag. And then we get the opening credits, and we have to talk about the opening credits and the theme, which I don't think has changed for all 5 years.
Why would you?
They hit on, I'll make the claim, greatest opening credit sequence of all time.
I would say this. I play this very fun, dumb bar game with friends where, and I invite everyone to play it. I think it's very fun. Think of a top 10 category.
Yeah.
Google, find a top 10 list. Then you tell your friends when it was published,
mm-hmm,
and what year it came out. So if it's like top 10 best TV married couples published in Entertainment Weekly in 2012.
Yeah.
Then people go around and try to guess it. If you were doing, I don't know if I'd call this the greatest theme song of all time, but I would say if I was playing that game and the list was best theme songs of all time, it would be one of the first I guessed, because I would imagine it would be on every single list.
I think that it is the fact that, okay, we both do improv.
Yeah.
We both came up in this. How many times have you heard the Fresh Prince theme song?
I've used it.
It's like just doing Hotspot as an improv warm-up.
I
fucking comes up all the time. Any improv set. I feel like if you go to an improv show, one out of 10 is going to have the Fresh Prince theme in it at some point.
I used to do, this is so cool. I used to do comedic tours around New York City, on a tour bus. And it was all like, they had comedians hosting it, and then the people on the street, I won't say their name because whatever, I'm not a huge fan of the company, but I'm not going to give them any promotion.
I think I know.
Yeah, the one that exists.
Yeah.
But
watch Difficult People this season. There might be a joke about it.
Do they?
If this is the same,
I'm sure
comedy
is.
Bus tour of Manhattan.
It's the ride. They're all around New York.
Yeah, there's a joke on it.
I will say,
pretty great.
I will say, people on the buses, the audience have a great time, but. I didn't leave on the best terms with the managers.
No one did.
I learned my lesson.
I've heard so many horror stories.
All the warnings from previous employees that I got. But one time, so there were a lot of like genuinely great freestyle rappers that I was working with. And once, one of them challenged me. He had just done, we were stuck in traffic. And the other host breaks into this amazing freestyle rap. Then he goes, okay. I forget my character's name, but John, now you go. The whole audience turns their heads and I just went, West Philadelphia, born and raised, and the whole audience applauded and cheered, and I went, thank God for the Fresh Prince theme song so I could get out of that pickle.
It's like Fresh Prince theme, helping white people rap effortlessly since 1991.
I mean, it's great. The song is catchy
it
as
is
hell.
So, like, it is maybe a legitimately, like, great single. Like, it's so good, so catchy. Like, I love opening credits. I love sitcom opening credits. The only detriment to this opening title sequence is that you don't see the actor's name with their face.
Oh.
Because I'm very much a proponent of, like, when the name is on the screen, I want to see them. I want to get, like, Parks and Rec, you get, like, a good, like, 3-second really distillation of who that character is. Like, Adam Scott's like, why are you looking at me? Ron Swanson is, like, posing with a gun, like...
I mean, I always loved the, you know, the Family Matters, who is the brother's friend?
Waldo Faldo.
Like, was it, oh, is it in the brother, what was the brother's name in Family Matters?
Eddie.
It's definitely Eddie. Yeah. I always remember him shooting a basket, then smiling at the camera. Yeah. That's my go-to 90s sitcom look to camera. I loved them.
My old improv team, Iron Ruckus, used to do a bit where we would just, like, do that. We would, like, we would recreate, like you're, like, stabbing someone, and then you, like, you notice the camera, and then, like, hi! Like, you, like, do the smile.
Oh my god, that might... be a great improv warm-up to can you distill a character game into 3 seconds of an opening credits theme clip?
Yeah. Just, we try to do, like, the grossest, dirtiest thing we could think of, and then, like, do the, like, notice and, like, hot, like, so I think it is a fantastic theme song. It really enters, like, gets you into the world. It, like, it's the it's like watching the pilot every time you watch show, because it's just right there.
It's the Gilligan's Island. It's that old classic, here's the plot. It's funny. It's catchy. I always love the shot of the police officer coming up to Will, and then he, while he's doing graffiti, and then Will Smith does that great silent comedian, like, what? I'm just a, this is spray on deodorant. Yeah. What?
It's so great.
I love that. That is the dumbest gag, and it makes me laugh every time. Yeah.
So we saw that, and then we started the episode proper, which starts off with them, like, with all them coming back from school. Or no, it's Hiller, it's Carlton and Will coming back, and I guess Ashley coming back from school.
Oh, I assumed it was the morning.
Or is it the morning?
I assumed they were going to school.
Well, they're asking, like, can Will come back in the house?
Well, I thought it was...
Did he spend the night out there?
I assumed, because I was actually surprised. I thought the opening, cold open, was going to be a fully self-contained little sketch.
Oh, yeah, not...
So when they were like, can Will come back inside, I thought it was like... So Phil's still angry about
ramifications.
So I assumed it was like he had to spend the night out there.
Yeah, I could... Yeah. Oh, he definitely spent the night out there. 100%. But this gets us to the Oprah Winfrey phone call, which got, like, they're at the house, the phone rings, is it Will answers it, and he says that it's...
Oh, who is it?
Some chicken here talking about she from the Oprah Winfrey show.
Oh, that would be for me.
Yes. Well, first he had the great non-joke of, you got a funny character on a sitcom, he's gotta answer the phone funny.
Uh-huh.
So he answers it as...
Home of the Whopper, what's your beef?
Which even the Fresh Prince audience gives kind of a tepid response to.
Okay, what? Still waiting for the plot to pick up. That's a placeholder joke. And it turns out, like, it's actually the phone call is for Trevor, because Hillary and Trevor have shown up, because we find out later he's living in the pool house with her.
Secret.
Ooh, secret.
That gets revealed in a big moment.
Secret scandalous relationship, because again, how old is she?
That we need to look that
18,
up. Because, well, they said she lost her job. Did Hillary drop out of school? Is that a plot?
Oh, man. See, that's... Ugh. I wasn't aware that Fresh Prince was doing all this, like, deep character arc building stuff.
I didn't realize until we got into it. It's like, oh, this is clearly... Well, there's so much conversation now about, if you listen to very nerdy podcasts, like this one, about television, about the lack of episodes, the death in the binging culture and the TV as novel, the lack of an episodic story. This feels almost modern in that, this does not have an episode story. This is just a chunk of the campaign story.
Of a campaign
story
thing
arc
that we discover, because, like, Sherman Helmsley plays his main rival, which we don't see him in this episode, but he plays that character, so he comes back at some point.
Yep.
And Hillary met Trevor in a previous episode, and here he is. So, like, Trevor, basically, like, he had already told Hillary, you guys are going to be on the Oprah Winfrey show, because as soon as he hangs up, Hillary already knows all the details.
Excitement. What?
No, it's all this excitement.
We're all going to be on Oprah.
We're all going to be on Oprah.
Also, so does Will. It almost feels like something was cut for time.
Oh, yeah, because Phil and Vivian come in, and Will's already like, we're going to be on the Oprah Winfrey show. And
which we did not see him get told.
We did not know that. We didn't know. I think Hillary just said... Trevor's ex works on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
Well, can I ask you, was this, what do you think? Was this episode written before or after? What did the story come first, or did Oprah Will Do the Show come first?
Oh, Oprah Will Do the Show came first.
It is a little shoehorned in.
Yeah, because I don't think you, even in 1992, Oprah Winfrey is the biggest star on television. So I don't think that you write, hey, yeah, we're going to run an Oprah episode. She'll do it. Like, yeah, I think Oprah probably liked the show, or maybe the cast had been on Oprah and she was like, oh, I would totally do it. You know,
yeah.
I feel like they had to backdoor manage, figure out how we're going to get Oprah into an episode. And it's a kind of, it's not super clunky. I mean, it's Oprah's doing an episode about political families, which is a thing she would do.
We have the campaign arc, so it fits in nicely with that. We have set up that Hillary's dating a TV anchor.
So it is feasible that his ex would be working on the Oprah Winfrey Show.
I will say, in the justification for them going on the Oprah Winfrey Show is not clunky. It's really the rush to explain what is happening in that opening scene that feels very
because
weird.
It's very quick, and then Will gets super excited, runs away, and then Trevor is like, they realize, oh no, it's only the immediate family, so only the five of them. Will cannot come, because even though he's been living with them for 2.5 years, is not a member of the immediate family. So it's just like, get an extra seat.
Can we talk about the complete illogic? So the premise of this day's episode of Oprah Winfrey is politicians and their family and how it affects their family. They have a guy running for office, running for superior judge, and his disadvantaged nephew has come from the inner city to live with him in Bel Air. And the Oprah Winfrey producers are like, oh yeah, we don't want that guy on the show.
We don't want that story.
Nonsense.
Because that makes Phil look great.
Yes.
Which is part of what, I mean, when they get there finally, and Will, sitting in the audience, he, brings that up a bunch of,
I have a question for Senator Lloyd. Senator, let's say that, you know, you had a young, urban, handsome nephew. Would you let him come on the Oprah Winfrey Show with you?
Then Oprah has to be I think I'm picking up on something here.
It does seem weird that they went with the idea that this would hurt the campaign, that they, that this is the plot they came up with for their Oprah episode.
I could see if they had justified it as, no, Will, when last time I let you in on my campaign, you fucked up my campaign ad by editing it, so this is your punishment. It would make more sense if Trevor got all of them tickets and Phil was like, no, as part of your punishment still, you're not going to be on the show. That makes more sense, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. Or, he'd punished him and then Will was somehow still angry about the punishment and somehow brought it up on air.
Yeah, that makes...
But it's very odd that they're well, this, the whole episode, I'm this clear fight is going on.
Yeah.
Oprah, pivot. That's what your episode of talk show is about. She eventually does. And we talked, we can get to it later, but the restraint when an on-air fight, physical fist fight happens.
Camera doesn't follow.
The Oprah camera guys do not follow the action.
No. This is 92. The Jerry Springer explosion hadn't... This was still 6 years away from that.
I guess.
They now have to break the news to Will that he can't be on it. And Vivian doesn't want to. Phil chickens out. I really like when they're flying to Chicago. There's this great cutaway of stock footage.
That joke made me laugh harder than anything the whole episode.
Yeah. Of all of a sudden... So it's just stock footage of a plane flying. And you hear voiceover.
Excuse me, sir. Are you Will Smith?
Yes, stewardess.
Your family asked me to speak to you.
Basically, Will just starts flirting with her.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, oh, hey, if I get to look at you for the entire trip, it's gonna be great. And she's like, more something or other.
Oh, would you like your pillow fluff?
She's totally, taken over by the suaveness. Doesn't tell.
Thing is, I loved what I initially thought the joke was gonna be. Because we set up that everyone in the family doesn't want to break the news to Will. He's so excited. They don't want to be the one, and so they keep putting it off. We'll tell him tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
We'll tell him later. We'll just tell him on the plane. Hard cut to, Are you Will? I'm the stewardess. Your family wants me to tell you something.
Yeah.
I thought it was just going to cut from there to Will brokenhearted.
Yeah,
I,
God, that'd be...
The, the cold callousness of asking a flight attendant to break the news is so funny to me.
Yeah, that's a great... I mean, even though it didn't go that way, like, the fact that that was the implication is...
But yeah, they play it more so the joke that Will, like, even she can't tell him.
Yeah.
But I, can I back up just a second?
Yeah, yeah.
What is the weird thing where that morning, the conversation right before the plane that leads into that stock footage, we see Aunt Vivian walks in, Uncle Phil is on the couch in his robe.
Yeah.
And she says, why aren't you dressed? We have to leave in an hour. And he says, there's plenty of time.
Yeah.
Did they just not have time to get James Avery dressed for that scene?
Yeah.
Because there's no purpose for that.
That goes nowhere. That's not a character game of his. He's not, like, always running late to things.
Do they... And he's like, yeah, he's very cast, like, oh, don't worry about it. Which I, like, he's going to be on the Oprah Winfrey Show. This is going to be great for his campaign. Yeah. Why is he not dressed?
Yeah. Yeah, that must have been... Maybe it's a thing of, okay, writing in my head.
Yeah.
Maybe it's like... the tape night was going so long, and it's just like, we don't have time to, like, get him in an outfit. Like, it's gonna take, like, you know, 5 minutes to put a suit on. Just put on a robe, go out there, we'll just tape the scene real quick.
I have a weird guess that they, cause they shot, now, do you think they shot this in Chicago? At Oprah's actual set?
That doesn't look like her... It looks close enough to her set, but looks like a multicam version of her set.
I feel
like she came out to LA for this.
It's definitely probably not her set because we see her office, the office, which is clearly not a real office.
Yeah.
This is, we're not turning into the Larry Sanders Show right here. This is not a shift to film and we see the backstage of a real office.
No. After the plane cutaway, the very first thing of them arriving in Chicago is them walking to the Oprah Winfrey backstage. And it is a combination like, lobby, craft services, Oprah's makeup room, all in one area.
The entire office for the Oprah Winfrey Show is almost the size of my apartment, and then a giant studio.
I love, like, they walk over and they see, like, Oprah's, like, makeup chair, and it's like, she sits right here.
She doesn't have a makeup, her own makeup room. She has a chair right next to the door where the guests enter.
Yeah.
But I had a guess that maybe they filmed the Oprah stuff first, and then something happened to the suit Phil wore.
Oh, that could see that.
So they're like, oh, crap, we don't have that clip. But I mean, this is just a very, like, I guess, writerly thing that I noticed that. And I was like, what was the purpose of that
why
line?
Why would you even put that in?
Like, you're writing the script, and you're like, ooh, I got it. Phil's still in his robe.
Yeah. And I also feel like, even if they hadn't called it out, I would not have...
No, I wouldn't have noticed it. I
haven't noticed it at all. But that's weird. There are a couple of really good jokes right before they go on the show. Like, first of all, we get what we thought was going to be a B-plot. We see Alexis, Trevor's ex... And she's just like Chicago Hillary.
I am so disappointed we didn't explore that further.
It was so good because she comes out and it's not counting on the actress's name, but she's just doing her best Hillary impression. She's wearing the hat, the like short skirt suit, like, and then they have a great meeting where they both see each other. They both like do synchronized like eye rolls to the person behind them. She leaves and Hillary's like, I don't know.
So that's Trevor's old girlfriend, huh?
Yeah. Wonder what he ever saw in her.
That's such a good...
I have such a sweet spot for sitcom regular character doppelganger plots.
Oh, so did you watch the Parks and Rec season where they all had those?
No, I have...
It was like season 6, I think.
That's after... I've only seen 1 through 4.5. Halfway through 5.
Because they merge Pawnee and Eagleton, and so all the Eagleton counterparts come.
Might have actually seen that. Yeah. That is Seinfeld. You know, every show, if they run long enough.
Bizarro Jerry.
They're going to do that at some point.
Yeah.
And I always love it because it always gets some guest actor doing an impression.
Oh, there's a great episode of News Radio where B.B. Newworth comes in as Vicki Lewis's
doppelganger. Perfect.
She's like single white femaling her the entire time.
It's
great. So yeah, that joke was so good.
And I also, and it goes with my other, another thing. It ties into one of my other favorite things of, like, finding out your significant other has A, either dated all people exactly like you, or B, all people not like you, but all the same. And I always like that joke as well.
Yep. I love that. then we get to Oprah. Then Oprah shows up, and we both gasped.
Yes.
When Oprah shows up on this...
Look, look, mommy, daddy, look!
You're Oprah Winfrey.
I am, and that means you must be...
Ashley.
Because I was like picking this sitcom, this episode out, I was like trying to remain spoiler-free about whether or not Oprah actually shows up. Because, like, it's a roll of the dice whether or not Oprah's actually going
to
be in this
It could have
episode.
Been one of those things where, like, we see them going in, we cut to, well, that was a disaster.
Yeah. Or the whole episode is about them not being able to get to the show.
Oh, yes.
Like, there's so many ways.
It's the Chinese restaurant Seinfeld episode. Yeah. But I have referenced Seinfeld multiple times as if that's the only sitcom I've ever seen in my life.
Well, it's one of three, right?
Yes.
Yeah, it's so when she showed up, it's just this... Oprah. It's Oprah in a sitcom. And then we get to see Oprah in a sitcom for the rest of the episode, for like the next like set piece. And it's like just, there's scenes with Will Smith and Oprah Winfrey doing a sitcom together. And it's similar to on this podcast when I did Family Ties and I did Tom Hanks and Michael J. Fox.
Oh, yeah.
Doing scenes together. And it's like, this is two of the biggest movie stars of all time in a sitcom before either of them was the biggest movie star of all time.
So Will Smith, I would say, arguably the biggest movie star in the entire planet for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
Oprah Winfrey, clearly one of the is she the wealthiest woman in the entire planet?
I think yeah. I mean, I think that she is one of the few women in like the Forbes top 100.
I have to imagine. I don't know exactly what her how well-known she is outside of America. I am sure massively well-known.
I think so.
So that is... But this is... Like, we're not there yet. This is 92?
Yeah.
She's... I mean, they're both obviously incredibly famous.
She is there. He is on his way there.
Yeah, he hasn't done... Like, I think like, he's a megastar, but it'll take, you know, the 1-2 punch of Independence Day and Men in Black to make him...
Yeah.
The biggest person on planet Earth. Yeah. But it is so like the idea of like they're talking to each other. These are two people who by the end of the decade this was shot. This is 92.
Yeah, 92.
By the end of that decade, these two people you could make a case that this is the most famous man and woman in the entire country, possibly the planet.
World. Yeah. Yep. That's
and they're doing silly jokes about Phil Donahue.
As a matter of fact, here.
Oh, what's this?
2 free tickets to the Donahue show. Tell Phil Oprah said hi.
Yeah. That's and why weren't like, you know, so like Oprah's comedy chops. What do we think? Because she mostly does dramatic stuff.
I wanted them to give her. I was a little disappointed. Well, I think this goes into my main disappointment about the episode is that, and I could have been, like, let's say I time traveled to the writer's room and heard this pitch. I might have thought it was an interesting idea, but 90% of the episode is just an Oprah Winfrey episode.
Mm-hmm.
It is, it's all, we get a couple of scenes, including just voiceover over stock footage of a plane.
Yeah.
Before they're on air. Then one scene after the episode. I was really expecting more about, like, I was shocked when the episode was done.
Yeah.
I thought there was going to be a, like, Will somehow gets himself back on the show to fix the problems he's made. I don't know how that was going to happen. I was eager to find out. But, like, so she is really just doing what Oprah Winfrey does. She's hosting a show, and even in her, maybe this has something to do with her, ironclad grip on her public persona, but she is playing herself.
Yep. Yeah.
So, and it's much like, compare this to Oprah Winfrey on 30 Rock, which I think is hilarious. Of course, that has the twist that this is, that was actually a little girl who, Liz was hallucinating was Oprah Winfrey. But, like, she... I don't know. She is such... She's barely a character.
She gets a... What we both noted was a very weird introduction to Viv. Because yes. Backstage before
oh,
the
yeah.
show...
Again, the serialization.
Viv is pregnant, which, again, like... She's, I mean, I guess like looking back, she is wearing a lot of like flowier shirts, yeah. But again, like.
It's the 90s.
It's like not real, like not really. And so when, when they're backstage before the taping, Viv like comes up and they're all like starstruck, obviously. Mm. It's Oprah. Yeah. And Viv says like, I'm your biggest
fan. I'm a very big fan.
Ooh, you sure are. You sure are. It's my pleasure.
She like touches Viv's stomach which is. A huge leap, I would say. Because,
yes.
like, Viv doesn't look that pregnant. And then also, just in general, strangers touching your stomach. But then again, like, it's Oprah. Like, I would probably let Oprah do anything.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, it's like, eh, she's Oprah.
This is her apartment now.
Yeah.
Sure. Yes,
yeah.
Oprah, it's
okay,
yours.
Bye, Oprah. It's your podcast, please.
It is. Well, so I did not know that Aunt Vivian was pregnant.
I only knew because of looking at Wikipedia summaries of previous episodes, because...
She does not read to me. The clothes don't. Mm-hmm. She's not showing in a huge way. It's not like a kind of thing where it's like, oh, this actress or this character is so pregnant, we need to reference it.
Yeah, Oprah's got to point this out.
It is... I mean, we could say that logically, Oprah probably has some knowledge about her guests she might know, but she never brings it up
yeah.
on the show that they have another child on the way. But it's... There was a couple seconds where I honestly thought so much of, you know, Oprah's public persona has to do with her weight fluctuations and her battling with dieting. I thought she was weirdly referencing that calling Aunt Viv chubby. I was so off put
that
by that moment.
So
and then you were like, oh, Aunt Viv's pregnant. And I was like, oh.
Thank God.
It was so strange. Like, I made an audible, like, ugh.
Yeah. there's also a really great moment backstage before they go on where the Oprah Winfrey theme starts playing and Carlton dances. And I just... I watched Oprah every day. Like, I would get home from high school... Middle school, high school, and I would watch Oprah, literally, I would watch it every day.
Uh-huh.
And so, like, that theme song, which is specifically, like, her 80s, early 90s theme song, the da 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 and Carlton is dancing, and it just, like, made me feel so nice, like, happy to hear that song.
Well, it's so funny, this is another point where, like, my lack of, so I don't think I ever watched a full episode of the Oprah Winfrey Show. That was like, I missed that mm-hmm. boom of talk shows because I was just a little too young. Like they
yeah.
were talking about serious issues and I didn't care. I knew eventually would know that Jerry Springer occasionally had pixelated nudity and that was exciting. For me.
Yeah, I was obsessed yeah. with Jerry Springer and
too hot for TV. Oh my. I didn't recognize the Oprah theme song at
yeah.
the beginning.
Yeah.
So and it's not. Pardon to anyone who is rightfully offended by this. Not hugely different from the Quincy Jones interstitial music for Fresh Prince.
Oh, yeah. I can see that.
So I initially thought that this is just an example of people love the Carlton dance. Let's just put some music. I thought he was imagining it. He was so happy to be in this location that he was imagining a song that we, the audience, was hearing and he was
just
dancing.
Going down. Now, that is the great Oprah. Because after that, it goes to, she adopted the, like, I'm every woman.
Oh, so yes.
She did that for a while.
That, I think.
Yeah.
I think I would know an Oprah theme song more from, like, a SNL parody
mm-hmm.
that would
yeah.
have a quick shot, so I would recognize that
I'm
more.
Pretty sure I know this, because I'll toot my own horn for a second.
Mm-hmm.
In 1990 or 1991, so only, like, a year before this, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles were on Oprah to promote their
viral superstar, Brett White.
Their Shells video, which, when I was, you know, when I was, like, six... I uh-huh. saw that tour. I remember my mom recorded that on VHS so I could watch it. And then it sat in my VHS entertainment center in my bedroom until high school, where I one night, me and my friends were hanging out. We were bored and we took it out, put it in, and high schoolers watching it, we immediately, like, found, like, double entendres and, like, weird, obscure... We also, we could, like, remove from the innocence of childhood, could see, like, this is a ridiculous cash grab involving, malfunctioning animatronics and a total pivot away from violence towards, like, pizza and friendship. And so I then became a ritual where I would, every time a new person came over to my house, all through college, too, we would watch Turtles on Oprah. So that theme song is, like, just in my head. And then I uploaded it to YouTube, shared it.
How many views did it have?
And I mean, it had, like, 600,000 or something. Like, it had a lot. A couple years. I haven't checked it in a couple years.
It's amazing. If people listen to this haven't watched it, it's amazing.
Go watch it.
I'll ask you, have you ever seen similar... There was an arena tour for Mortal Kombat.
No.
And they, to promote it, they had some of the actors go on. I forget what news show it was, but I saw clips. And if you think the pivot away from violence that the Turtles had to do was belabored and difficult, the watching those poor, because they're stuntmen, also, they don't want to be doing this.
And Mortal Kombat is only about fighting.
No, it is... only about graphic violent fighting.
Ripping people's spinal cords out.
And watching a guy in a Raiden costume. Some poor stuntman in a Raiden costume on some, like, morning TV show have to be like, we're here to promote athletics in young people. Is one of the funniest things I've ever
and
seen.
And finishing things. Like how I finished him. So speaking of violence, we do get... so, like, the talk show turns... Uh-huh. To, like, Will's asking inappropriate, well, not, like, aggressive questions from the audience about, like, put me up there. Oprah figures it out. He joins them on stage. And then it comes out that, like, Trevor's living in the pool house. And, like, Hillary gets into a fight with Carlton. Uncle Phil is just, like, tense and angry the entire time. A guy from the audience, like, raises his hand and then starts basically, like, calls Will's mom an idiot.
Well, if you ask me, your whole damn family is crazy.
All right. Now, see, brother, if we was in Philly, it might have to be something. But we on TV, and I believe Martin's philosophy, nonviolence, so I'm a chill.
And if your mama sent you out here to live with them, then she's crazy, too. Hey, man, don't nobody talk about my mother, man!
Very...
very aggressively.
Did the Oprah audience ever get that aggressive?
I don't know. But then Will, like, jumps up, charges him, and they fight off screen. And, you know, this is 6 years before Jerry Springer, yes. Where that camera, that's the whole point of that show, is the fighting. Mm-hmm. This, they cut to commercial. It just made me think about how that talk show culture of the 90s, it doesn't exist anymore, really.
No.
And we're now so far removed from it that it is so fascinating to think back to that.
Yeah.
To that era.
Well, so Springer wasn't on yet, but Morton Downey was on. And that, you know, proto Springer. So they absolutely, that kind of aggressive trash talk show was around. I think I was recently trying to have trying to think, like, what is the equivalent of that now?
So you watch...
I'm sure there's YouTube stuff.
I think it's, like, well, reality TV, yeah. I think it's Real Housewives stuff. I think that's what fills the void.
Absolutely, yeah. That
because the reason that we watch all those talk shows, in some cases, was the tawdry, trashy fighting of it.
Yeah.
And tawdry, trashy fighting is...
She's been sleeping with her stepfather, let's bring him out!
Yeah, so, that's so fascinating. And then, the episode ends with Phil's points falling down.
He falls 8 points, which is huge in a local election, which probably... Well, I don't know it's 92, so it's a presidential election year, so people will be at the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And this is November 8th, you said?
Yeah, that's part of my trivia, which we can move to the trivia portion.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't really have that much interesting stuff, but I don't know.
We do end with the final joke that Judge Robertson... So, Will gives his big, like, I'm sorry, Uncle Phil, but, you know, you'll
you're
be fine.
Great. You took me into your
you're
home.
Good man.
This looks great.
Judge Robertson has nothing to compete with that. And then the unseen voiceover from the TV news anchor.
And in a related story, Judge Carl Robertson announced today that he is adopting 12 ghetto youths.
Yeah. And that's how it ends.
Like, that's the end of the episode.
Will's like, oh, guess not. Like, that's it. Like, there's no happy ending.
No, absolutely not. It is a whoops, bummer.
And also the fact that we were only, just watching this episode removed from context, yeah. we were only half sure it was part of a larger storyline. So you could see, like, oh, this was just the end of their done-in-one episode of, like, yeah. Oh, that's just a bummer ending. Like,
this is the episode where Phil's running for office.
And it all gets ruined because of a faulty trip
of Oprah.
For sure. So yeah, movie. Trivia. Woo!
To the house about 7 or 8, and I yelled to the cabbie, yo, home, smell you later. Looked at my kingdom, I was finally there. To sit on my throne as the prince of...
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Bel Air.
So this episode was watched by 23.6 million people.
Wow, add two.
Yeah.
Add two.
So I noticed, like, going through, because I wanted to see if there was a spike because this was an Oprah episode, because they definitely to have marketed it as
Oprah.
Oh, I'm
sure.
And I learned that, no, like, it was pulling in 23.6 million viewers, like, on average around that time.
So it didn't even get a bump.
Yeah, it was kind of, but I noticed by going back and looking at previous weeks is that it bounced around. It aired on Wednesdays and Saturdays. Monday was its normal night, but it did that because there were election specials for Perot and Clinton that kept preempting it on Monday nights.
Why wasn't Bush in them?
Bush didn't, maybe he had other nights, but, like, there was a Monday night that it was...
Well, these are specials just, like, special hour-long interviews.
Monday, like, the Monday before, so I guess, because the Tuesday right before, this is the first episode aired, like, in the, with Clinton as incoming president. Because the election was November 3rd.
Oh, it was early. Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the episode was, so the, so, like, on November 2nd, the night before the election, there was a night of, two networks were airing Perot specials, and one, and NBC, I think, was airing a Clinton special, or something like that. And then the week before that was a Fresh Prince episode, but the week before that was a, like, Vote 92, like, it might have been a debate night or something. Yeah. And so that was, like, interesting to me to think, like, Fresh Prince, like, this is the first episode aired with Clinton as the elected president. Wow. President-elect Clinton.
Now, I have to imagine, when they were breaking this season and finding the we gotta have the season arc.
Yeah.
They probably planned this campaign because it was an election year.
Yeah,
right?
I could see that. Yeah, because when they go to the end, they're talking about, like, polls and stuff.
Yeah.
They're thinking, like, there's no way people weren't watching this in 92 and, like, being like, yeah, I can see. Okay, I know what they're talking
about. So interesting
about.
Then that this aired after the election.
Yeah.
I would have assumed if that was their plan, they would have tried to wrap it up around the same
earlier.
Time. Because I, like, by the end of an election year, you've gone through.
This is the 9th episode of the season. You can do a nice chunk of arc in 9 episodes, but they didn't.
People must have been really tired of campaign
stuff.
Yeah,
like, dear God, stop it. 60 Minutes was the number one show that week, of course. Mm. So for the season, Fresh Prince was 18th for the season.
Wow. How did that compare to its former seasons?
Oh, I also forgot to say, this was the number 12 most watched show the week it aired.
Yeah.
So the Oprah episode was the number 12 most watched. for the average, it was 18th for that season, which I think is, like, pretty high for it. I think it did fall as it went on.
It's so funny we're talking about 22. We're just tossing around that number, 22 million. No show gets near that today.
No. A successful sitcom now, well, like, Big Bang Theory gets, like, 16 million or so, so.
That is number one.
Yeah, that's number one.
The biggest sitcom in the world.
Like, you know, TV shows get renewed now. Like, I was looking at The Office's ratings, and because I realized, oh, The Office was never a hit. It was only
a hit.
It was
a cultural
It was a cultural thing, but that show, the highest it ever ranked in the yearly, into year-end rankings was, like, 50th or something.
That's crazy.
50th. And I don't think it ever ended a season with more than 10 million viewers, which is crazy to think of how important and how, like, this show ran for like 9 years, 201 episodes. Like,
what's the, there's some shows that are just so big. It's like, you know, we a year ago had all those, the end of Girls retrospectives. And it's like, no, outside of New York City, no one was watching Girls.
No one watches Girls. So for the season, the top five shows of the 92-93 season were, so this is contemporaries, Murder, She Wrote, number five, number four, Murphy Brown, number three, Home Improvement, number two, Roseanne, one, 60 Minutes. 60 Minutes was a juggernaut.
Interesting.
In the 80s and 90s. And you know, we don't ever think about
we
it.
We think about dumb, like you know, the stereotype of the dumb 90s sitcoms, and you look at that list... You know, you have Murphy Brown and Roseanne, which were fairly politically aware and tackling things.
Yep.
And they were top five.
I will go to bat for Home Improvement, but I say that, like, in terms of family sitcoms, those first couple seasons, sharp.
And plenty of Eastern philosophy, courtesy of Wilson.
Yeah! So, that's the thing, is there was all these, and this is also before... the NBC TV era, the must-see TV era, is about to begin. Oh, so this is 1992-93. Frasier is debuting the following season. So Frasier season one is concurrent with Fresh Prince season four.
How long after Cheers ending did Frasier start?
Like 3 months.
Oh, so it's literally that
Yeah,
next
it was
season.
Literally like it ended and he started in the fall. They like
That's
rode that way.
Crazy.
Yeah. Because... Cheers, I think, is still on right at this time, which is also, this is like the last season of Cheers. Oh, God. So, yeah. IMDb, 206 users rated this episode a 7.8. Does that feel high, low? Would you, as a Fresh Prince aficionado, is that a title you're going to wear now?
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
I'll see everyone at PrinceCon. The Prince Musician Convention, where we also talk about Fresh Prince.
There's the Fresh area where you go to talk about that.
Just in case anyone goes there confused.
I don't know.
I think just the lack of the weird lack of resolution bothered me. I think it's like any big cameo episode where it, to me, this episode is so drowned out by the Oprah cameo, and yet at the same time, I was disappointed by the lack of stuff that Oprah did.
Like a little bit more Oprah, if you're going to build an episode around her.
Like, a weird, like, I would say one of my favorite huge celebrity cameo episodes was, and I just thought of it because we were just talking about, Prince on New Girl.
Oh, God, yes. That was...
I thought that's a great episode of New Girl.
Yeah.
And Prince... is it plays into the iconic status of Prince, and he's just genuinely so funny. I mean, like, we know this is a huge celebrity who she, this is 7 years after The Color Purple. So the writers of this know this is an accomplished actress.
She can do it.
So
she can handle
it. I felt a little disappointed that so much of it was just her just doing her regular
show host. I would love an oral history to know, like, how this came about. Because, like, when Prince died, there were all these articles about how that episode came about and how they were, you know, they were, I think, like, at Paisley Park about to shoot and still not sure it was going to happen. Like, it was just the whole taping of the episode was all this, like, we have to have so many backup plans. Because, like, is it going to happen? We have no idea what he's going to want to do, how much he's going to want to do. And it turned out he only wanted to do the episode if he could actually have a lasting impact on the series and, like, really play into the arc of Nick and Jess. And then he also suggested all these jokes
That's amazing.
That they incorporated. So you're wondering, how did they get Oprah? Were they sure Oprah was going to do it? Did they have to write this episode last minute? Were there limitations with what Oprah wanted to do, didn't want to do? I would love to know more, because I think that would really influence, that probably definitely influenced how the episode came together.
I would guess that's part of it, because, like, so that, to compare it again to that Prince episode, there's so much fun that is played with his persona.
Yeah.
And he seems very, like, I mean, it's, one thing is that when your persona is that you're the coolest guy in the world, it's pretty easy to be like, yeah, you can riff on that. Yeah, sure, have that. Fun.
I'm so cool. Please. Oh, keep stinging me.
But there's something, I wonder if it had to do with, like, so that is Prince, you know, we're in, unrelated to his tragic death, we're still in the you know, past prime era. He cemented his status as one of the biggest musicians of the world. And I think, like, so we talked about within a few years, while she's already hugely successful, and maybe I'm getting my Oprah timeline wrong, but I would say Oprah as the most powerful woman in the world is not yet.
I think she does get there mid to late 90s, I think is when she really hits her peak.
So I wouldn't be surprised if she, at this point, to get to that place that she is about to get to, she has such an ironclad grip on her public persona, and she is playing herself in this. So maybe their ability to do that much with her, because really her only real, like, kind of off, like, not off, but like a joke that has any edge to it, is that at the end she tries to sabotage Phil Donahue's show by sending Will to go on that next.
Yeah, yeah. And she gets, like, sassy with Will a little bit. Like, she does. Tells him, like, sit down. It's not even, because I would imagine there are probably episodes of the Oprah Winfrey Show that aired around this time that were probably edgy. Like, she was probably edgier or more aggressive. So this is, like, it's not even, like, it's a heightened version of Oprah. It's, like, Oprah adjacent. It's, like, she's in that realm.
Would you say there's any moment in this episode where she or the show, and by that tacitly approved by her, makes fun of her?
No.
Or, like, has any jokes about her persona or what the public thinks of when they think of Oprah?
No. So, not even in a good way. Not even in a way, you're so important.
Like, the most powerful woman in the world jokes, ambitious jokes.
Even when they meet her, they don't even really have over-the-top reactions. They're, like, starstruck, but it isn't like, oh my god, you could order my execution and I would be fine with that because you're great. Like,
and I guess by the end of the decade, the jokes would be she's the richest woman in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, it really feels kind of toothless in its use of Oprah. And the lack of resolution and the fact that it's so revolved around Oprah makes it, to me, a slightly subpar Fresh Prince episode.
Yes.
And it's not a great Oprah episode. So I think that on those points, I wouldn't rank it that. I would rank it a little lower.
I would go, I'll say seven. I could say like a seven.
There are things in here, like, it does one of my favorite sitcom things where they recount old plots, and then to the observers, they sound crazy, like Hillary getting kicked out of the house, all that stuff.
Oh, he changed all the locks, that was great.
I love that stuff, but it doesn't feel like, and I know it may sound like I'm asking a lot of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, but it doesn't seem like they utilize the Oprah structure to have the characters, like, actually examine. Like, you can see how you can do the same episode, have them break down, and then maybe at the end, like, through Oprah, like, she has a scene where she's like, you're actually, like, has them be you fought, but you...
She should have healed them. She should have done, like, they should all have been crying, yeah. It does exist in this middle ground, because it's like, it's either, like, I wanted the whole episode to be Oprah, so we really get the time to do all that stuff, because, like, that would have been great.
Oh, imagine if we started with the actual opening Oprah opening credits.
That would have been great. Or we see less of the show, we get more of Oprah like backstage, getting into business. We get to see Oprah playing a character of Oprah backstage.
Yeah. But
instead, we have, like, some scenes at home, then we have, like, a larger scene at the Oprah show, but it doesn't really, like,
it feels like this is the second act of a story, which seems interesting. And part of that, I think, is maybe the serialization, which is so, I, It's crazy. I did not realize Fresh Prince was this arc heavy.
Yeah, there's apparently a season 3 arc. So who would you say had the must-see performance in this episode?
Okay, well, I guess it's not going to be Oprah. I'm afraid
so
to say.
Sad, so sad. One thing Oprah doesn't win.
And she has, like, unlike watch the 30 Rock episode. I think that is an episode. She's so fun. Lizzie, the premise they give her, Tina Fey's reactions to her, I think, are much funnier. Mm-hmm. The supporting cast reactions to because the whole thing is right. She's going to get Oprah to come. So all the other characters are so excited.
Yeah.
So I think, to me, I mean, you're going to watch this. I'm always going to be so impressed by Will Smith's charisma.
Yeah.
I love just the character of Phil is so great, and so much of that is embodied by James Avery.
Yes.
But I kind of want to go with the gag side characters of... God, I wanted to watch more of Alexis and Trevor. I wanted to see Hillary deal with those characters.
Yeah.
Because those performances and just the idea of the Alexis character was so funny to me.
Yeah, coming onto a show and being able to actually, like, steal attention. And I think Trevor can walk in and steal attention from Hillary and Will is very... He really does command that scene.
I mean, the pompous TV anchor, that is not a... unique character. No. That is a very well-worn sitcom character, but he's fun.
This is Trevor Collins. Goodbye, and Godspeed.
Yeah. And I don't even think the writing has that much enough fun with it. They do have that great joke. I always, when I watch these old sitcoms, the audience, the jokes that I laugh the hardest at, the audience gives the least.
Yeah.
When Carlton yells that Trevor has been staying in the boathouse. Boathouse?
Pool house. Yeah.
Not a boathouse. And they know because he has a makeup case there, and then, which is funny enough, but then Hillary says...
Keep some makeup case there.
That's a lie.
It's not.
Stand on a chair and say that to my face.
Is so funny. And the audience gives it nothing.
Yeah, it's like, that's great. That's such a great I think I am going to give it to Phil. Mm. The thing is, like, when there's a lead character on a show, it's always, you're probably going to give it to the... So, like, this was Will's episode to lose, and I think that while, of course, Will Smith is great in this episode, of course he is. He is always great. I do think I have seen better Will Smith performances in A Fresh Prince. I think this episode gives him some stuff to do, but not a lot of outstanding stuff to do. Yeah. And so then I think that everyone else kind of, it balances out, and other people rise up. I think that Phil's performance in that edited video, which is a gift in the editing, but also, like, he had to actually do that stuff, like, stuffing his face full of pizza, like, partying at the New Year's party. Really fun stuff. I loved his face after Will asked that first question on Oprah, and his anger face, like, his mortified anger face was really good.
James Avery's eye acting throughout this episode, and I think I think what makes him so perfect, what makes that character so wonderful throughout the series, is that James Avery exudes such warmth in the moments that makes you believe, like, oh, this is a good man who is genuinely... And it seems so weird to talk about this stuff in the context of the silly show, but he exudes such warmth of, like, yes, he is so annoyed by this kid who's in his house, but he is always going to do the right thing by him. And I remember when James Avery died, there were so many articles and so many comments, but internet commenters, like, I wanted him to be my uncle or dad so badly.
Yeah.
But then he's also, what makes him so great as a foil to Will, Phil and Will, Jesus, Cho, why did you do this? his angry facial expression.
He's the scariest.
Bogging out eyes.
Yeah.
That he gives. And then in this show, he has those eyes while also having intense plastered on smiles, like when the show is going south, of just like
And I also loved him making bad jokes, like, which, trying to, like, sell the audience of, like, hey, I'm having a good time.
If I saw a politician make that one joke that he makes to Aunt Viv, I'm not talking about the Fresh Prince audience, the Oprah audience, the fictional audience, acts like it's a bad joke. It's a funny joke.
Did Oprah ask her, how's your sex life?
It's an audience question, which the audience goes,
has being in politics ruined your sex life?
No, mine's great. How's yours, honey?
Which I think is very funny. Like, it's such a dad joke, but it's funny.
Yeah, Uncle Phil gets a lot to do in this episode, so I'm definitely...
I feel bad about my choice.
No, I like giving Trevor and Phil some love. Must other people see this episode of Fresh Prince?
I would say only if they are dying to know every beat of the campaign arc.
Yeah, I would say if you just if you're an Oprah completist and 100%,
that as well,
those exist. If you're an Oprah super fan, I think this is a fascinating pop culture artifact from 1992 that you should definitely pop in. Although you probably already watched it a bunch, because if you're obsessed with Oprah, I feel like this is one of the first things you go to.
I will say, interesting, so I was double-checking if the campaign was a full arc, so I just Googled Judge Banks campaign arc Fresh Prince. The first thing that came up was a ton of YouTube clips of the remixed campaign ad.
Oh, yeah.
So this might be people's favorite moment from that story. That, I mean, the cold open is great, although it's such a good setup and joke, I wanted it to go further.
Yeah.
But I would say you can watch the cold open, you can watch the scene with Oprah and Will Smith, just to watch that.
For the sheer amazingness of seeing incredible. Like, these two people on the scene.
I would say this is not the best example of Fresh Prince.
No.
This is not the best example of Oprah Winfrey as a pop culture icon.
Track down, watch Turtles and Oprah on YouTube.
Yes.
And then also watch the episode where I think Trevor splats to death. Which I need to actually see.
The instant we're done recording.
Look that up and hopefully I'm not wrong. Oh, yeah. So yeah, thank you so much for coming out here and talking about
the freshest
of princes. Where anything you want people to check out, or where can people find you?
Oh gosh, my goodness. They can follow me on Twitter at just my name, John Bershad. It's John without an H. I host a very silly podcast myself, which is on hiatus at the moment because I'm busy, but it's The Emoji Movie, the podcast. Has nothing to do with the Emoji Movie. It is just me tasking funny people. I give them a property that has no narrative, like emojis, and they try to make up what a big-budget movie based on that property would be. I need a better way to explain the premise. It doesn't take 30 seconds, but I promise you, in practice, it's very fun.
Oh, yeah. And that does it for this week's episode of Must Have Seen TV. Thanks again to my guest, John Bershad, for dropping by and talking about the Fresh Prince of Bel-Air with me this week. Next week on the show, we will be starting the run of our holiday gauntlet. I'm not going to put an echo effect on that, so I don't know why I affected that voice. But anyway, we are going to kick off a whole month's worth of Halloween episodes, beginning with the news radio episode, Halloween. Halloween is in season 3. It is either episode 5 or 7. I think it is number 7 on iTunes, but it aired 5th that season. It's a whole thing. We'll get into it next week. You can watch the news radio episode on Crackle. You can watch it for free there. You can also buy it on Amazon or iTunes. And that is the very first Halloween episode of 4 coming up this month. Ooh, I love holidays. Until then, you can send your questions about sitcoms to musthaveseentv@gmail.com. You can also follow the podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr at musthaveseentv. If you like what you've heard, please, I beg you to rate and review the show in iTunes. I will read your review on air and give you a digital high five. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at @BrettWhite. You can read the words that I write at thecider.com. You can check out my sitcom t-shirts and stickers at tpublic.com/user/BrettWhite. The theme song is Patricia's Moving Picture by The Go Team. Thanks to Acast for hosting this podcast. Thanks to everyone for listening, and I will see y'all next week on Must Have Seen TV.
Hold up. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details. Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.